today's headlines are full of details of the US congressional delegation heading to London to see what leverage America can exert over the Tory government on the post-electoral protocol politicking. And another new development today, Northern Secretary Brandon Lewis is threatening to cut MLA salaries unless the DUP allows the ball to start rolling on getting an executive up and running. The knots in this mess are just getting pulled tighter and tighter with no clear path on how they might be worked out. I'm joined now by the DUP MP, Gregory Campbell. Good afternoon, Gregory. How are you?
Afternoon. I'm fine, thank you.
From where you're sitting, can you tell us where do you think we are at?
Oh, I think we're in a bit of a mess. If you look back a couple of years, you know, our own government and the EU entered into intensive discussions, and the protocol was the end result of those discussions. There were a number of us who said, look, this isn't going to work. This is going to create huge problems. And initially, there was the dismissal of that stance. And some of the other parties were talking about the rigid implementation of that protocol. And I think over the months that followed, everyone saw then some of the problems. The product lines of many stores were reduced because people couldn't get goods across. There were these ludicrous checks on goods that couldn't possibly go into the EU single market. And there was just a complicated series of problems that flowed from the protocol, which I think are only being brought to a head now. But I would rather that they're brought to a head now rather than this linger on and the problems get worse. Which
and
is what
and where we
do.
Are, Gregory, this weekend, this delegation heading over from the United States, do you see the British government as an honest broker in this conversation, or is it more consumed about its own internal politics?
Well, I don't think they acted as honest broker in establishing the protocol after Boris Johnson saying that there wouldn't be a border in the Irish Sea, and now there quite obviously is one, hopefully soon to be dealt with. But I don't think you could regard either him or the government as honest brokers to date. What they have to do now is re-establish their credentials and they need to tell the Americans, look, there's no possibility of a hard border on the island of Ireland. Everyone, I think, now accepts that. I and my colleagues have said that repeatedly over the past 3 or 4 years, to use the prospect of a hard border in order to try and create an Irish Sea border was really, it was beyond belief that people could do that. And your former Taoiseach did that, because when he took that famous or infamous copy of the Irish Times with the burnt out customs post to Macron and Merkel and said, we don't want to go back to that, that's not going to happen. So if there's going to be no hard border on the island environment, which there isn't and can't be, we also have to make sure that there is no Irish Sea border, which there mustn't be. And that takes political will to ensure that that doesn't happen. Then we've got to assist the EU in devising a system where they can be sure their EU single market is protected, while Northern Ireland's place within the UK single market is also protected.
I read very closely Geoffrey Donaldson's statement, listened to him on BBC Radio Ulster yesterday, speaking about the needs for a change to, quote, the current protocol. Tell me, does that change of language there, where there's no more talk about scrapping the protocol, does that mean that the DUP accepts the EU is entitled to protect the integrity of the single market and its borders and so on, and that what you're looking to do here is to renegotiate around the margins of the protocol rather than sweep it away entirely?
No, it doesn't. You shouldn't detect any change. Maybe a different language used and different words used. But the issue remains that the protocol in and of itself is providing insurmountable barriers, both politically, legally, and in terms of trade. So that has to be replaced, not tinkered at the edges of, but it has to be replaced. Now, what you call the replacement, you know, and I don't think people will get tied up in what it will look like. But what our government needs to do is, for example, if we look at what the protocol itself says, it says that there should be no diversion of trade. And if there is diversion of trade, either the EU or the UK may unilaterally take appropriate safeguard measures. Now, hopefully you will see, if the government proceeds, our government proceeds in the way they've outlined, hopefully you will see that that is the UK taking appropriate unilateral action to safeguard our position.
Okay.
Now, if that then leads to renegotiating the current protocol into something that is acceptable to both nationalists and unionists, because that's the key point here. In Northern Ireland, in the past 10, 15, 20 years, we've proceeded at painstakingly slow progress. Yes, I concede that. But we always proceed on the basis of consent in both the main communities. That has to be the case with the protocol.
OK, but tell me, what is there that you cannot negotiate now while being inside an executive that's up and running? What can only be dealt with while you're not dealing with the cost of living crisis? Because it's really quite striking that the vast majority of people in Northern Ireland, just as I'm this side of the border, I'm sure, are talking about the cost of living crisis. And the fact that you're not in the executive means that there's £420 million that Conor Murphy doesn't get to spend right now in solving that crisis.
Well, of course, Conor Murphy can spend quite a bit of that if he chose to do so. But let's park that to one side. Your initial part of your question was what are you doing now that you couldn't do when the executive's up and running? If we remember, the executive has been up and running for the past 18 months, since January last year. And unfortunately, the protocol and the issues dealing with it haven't really moved one iota in that 18 months while the executive is up and running. In fact, many people are saying that it's only since the election results on the 5th of May, which is just over 2 weeks ago, that we've seen significant progress whenever the executive has been down. So, you know, I would turn that question on its head, that it seems to be, I don't know why that would be the case, but it seems to be that it is only when pressure is applied that governments turn their minds to getting issues resolved. They've moved in the past 2 weeks much further than they did in 18 months before. Well, let's keep working at that for the next few weeks and get this resolved so that we can all get on with helping people on day-to-day issues, whatever their colour is, whether it's orange, green or other.
Gregory Campbell, you might stay with us because you might be interested in what the panel who are with me have to say on this. Darren O'Rourke, to you first. Think and say what you want of the DUP, but they have a democratic mandate now to renegotiate the protocol. That was their electoral platform, and doing anything else other than renegotiating it would be the height of cynicism.
The protocol is in the process of being renegotiated, and for an extensive period long before the election.
The British government did effectively nothing since October.
The European Commission have engaged and engaged and engaged and come forward with proposals. The British government, and I feel they're enabling the DUP, and both the DUP and the British government are this high level of brinkmanship.
I know, but hang on a second. But yourself and Gregory Campbell are actually occupying pretty much the same position here, do you not see? You're both, the DUP is actively holding a gun to their head and saying, you've got to engage on this, you've got to renegotiate the protocol. You want the British government to engage as well.
But it can't be at the expense of an up and running executive in the north. The people had their say. On the 5th of May, they elected a government for the North, an executive for the North. That needs to be established. And it can't be the case that, you know, the day-to-day issues, the really important issues that the electorate in the North, and I canvassed extensively in South Down, the electorate in the North, they were not talking about the protocol. What they want is certainty in relation to the future of the protocol, the East-West and in the internal market and also in the single market, that if there are issues there, they need to be resolved. But it cannot be at the expense of the executive up and running and denying the people of the North funding to deal with the cost of living crisis, to deal with the health crisis.
But you were quite happy for 3 years for that expense to be incurred when Sinn Féin was the reason behind the executive not being up and running.
Obviously, that was an issue internal to the machinations of the executive in the North. That was internal politics within the North. That was different to, you know, the DUP saying...
It was about
saying,
an Irish Language Act, which you weren't getting, and you said until we get what we want, there's going to be no executive.
they were agreements that were to be delivered on. The agreement that was agreed in relation to Brexit, which, you know, the people of the North voted against, that is being delivered on, you know. So, and it's a negotiation between the European Commission and the British government, as opposed to the Northern Executive is not a party to the protocol or to that agreement. So it's an entirely different proposition.
Niall Collins, can we walk or ask you to walk in Gregory Campbell's shoes or any unionist's shoes for a few minutes, please, and just say, you know, the arrangements under the protocol lead to, if you like, the effective economic unification of the island. So if you were a unionist, you'd be saying we're only a hop, skip and a jump from the political unification of the island as well. That's an existential threat to my country. I'm going to act against it. Why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't anybody feel justified in doing that?
Well, look, I mean, firstly, we have to recognise that the situation is unsustainable, and it's not an either-or. There is no reason why the Assembly can't commence work, why MLAs can't take up their seats and give the people who voted for them a voice and give people representation.
Because the British government is not an honest actor in this process, and the DUP is actually trying to hold them to account.
No, look, I mean, I don't, nobody, you know, I mean, Micheál Martin has been in the North. We just don't agree that it's an either or. There is no reason why the Assembly and the Executive can't get up and running, and why negotiations between the UK and the EU in relation to difficulties with the protocol can't continue in parallel. You know, let's, as Simon Coveney said during the week, let the adults get together in the room and work this through. The protocol is there for a reason. You know, we have to protect the Good Friday Agreement. We have to protect the institutions. But it does afford Northern Ireland the best of both worlds, as we know. And it was an accommodation which was brought about. And when Micheál Martin, for example, yesterday spoke to business leaders in Northern Ireland when he met them, they told him, yes, there's been many upsides to the protocol, and there are, and we acknowledge that there are difficulties and that there are issues. But the whole process has been stalled since last October to allow the elections to take place. And there is no reason now why everybody can't get around the table and get into a negotiating process and work out a solution, because what we have now is stalemate. And we're hearing the only noise is let's act unilaterally, and that won't achieve anything.
Alice Mary, do you think that it might be time to start thinking the unthinkable here, that the Good Friday Agreement is no longer fit for purpose? We've left the training wheels on the bike for, I think it'll be a quarter century, won't it, by next April. But that's not good for politics. It's time to get them to ride the bike on their own.
I think the Good Friday Agreement is absolutely core to everything. And it's really important to underscore that, you know, the protocol is in no way in conflict with the Good Friday Agreement. It's there in Article 1. It's really clear.
But institutions as set up under the Good Friday Agreement allows one party to collapse the whole shebang.
I think it is really unfortunate that you have a situation where you are blocking the formation of an, where there is, the DUP are blocking the formation of an executive, especially when, you know, there's mechanisms, you know, aside from the monitoring committee between, you know, the EU and the UK, there's also mechanisms even in 2024 where that Northern Ireland Assembly would have the opportunity to vote on some of the provisions in respect of the protocols. You know, you have mechanisms and systems that are there. But I think the Good Friday Agreement is a fundamental basis, nonetheless, in terms of how we move forward on the North, and it's based on consent, yes. But one of the other parts of the consent is that it allows that possibility of, you know, for example, future border polls to be talked about.
You think it should still be carved in stone that we shouldn't revisit it at the same time as revisiting the protocol?
I think that the Good Friday Agreement actually allows for evolution and changes in terms of what the public want in the North. I think the fact that the Good Friday Agreement underscores human rights provisions is something that's been really important and continues to be really important when we're seeing kind of worrying erosions in some human rights provisions. And I think it is the basis from which we can move on. And I think that there does need to be very clear pressure, certainly though, at the moment, people want an executive, and the majority, the opinion was there. If you look at the span of what was going, I do think it is. I would disagree that the last 2 weeks have been constructive. I think the last 2 weeks have set us backwards.
All right.
Certainly in terms of that UK
legislation. Before I let you go, before I wrap up on this, Gregory Campbell, are you feeling the hand of friendship being extended north across the border this afternoon?
I want to check what's in the hand, because it's certainly not open-ended by the sounds of it. Now, let's look at it like this. Does any of your panel think for one moment that if we had an election in Northern Ireland to the Assembly 2 weeks ago, and every single nationalist representative elected to that Assembly had said that there was a set of structures that had been internationally agreed and were binding on all parties, but that they, the nationalist community, 100% were opposed to it? Does anyone seriously think that everybody in that panel in Dublin, in Belfast, Brussels and London would be saying this is going to have to change?
But Brexit happened. Every single nationalist elected representative in the North opposed Brexit. And we have
it
to live
was
with Brexit.
A national vote across the United Kingdom. What we have in Northern Ireland is a power-sharing arrangement with parties across the political divide who have to work together. We all accept that and try to work within those parameters.
Okay.
Now, either you accept that that's the way you do things, or you don't. Now, if we all accept that that's the way you do things, then let's solve this problem and move on and do them.
But you're not accepting that at the moment, are you, Gregory Campbell? I mean, you're refusing to work with these people.
Once we get the protocol sorted, that's the way it works.
All right.
The protocol is an international agreement.
If nationalists opposed to it, you would not be saying the things you're saying now.
All right. Gregory Campbell of the DUP, thank you very much. Panel staying with me. I'm going to take another break.